This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, October 15th, 2020 on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Hello, it's great to be back with you at noon today after 3 days of special coverage from the U.S. Senate confirmation hearings for Judge Amy Coney Barrett. Later this afternoon on our show, Issue 1 is about roads. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda begins a series of reports on the issues remaining on the Arkansas ballot as we near early voting. Arkansas's cases of COVID-19 continue to rise. Yesterday, the Arkansas Department of Health reported 884 confirmed cases of the disease and tallied another 195 probable cases. Another 21 confirmed virus deaths, plus two more probable deaths, were added to the state's fatality totals. There have now been 1,634 deaths from COVID-19 in Arkansas, and there are now 587 people hospitalized because of coronavirus in Arkansas. That's 19 fewer than the previous report. Hospitals in Benton and Washington counties report 95 new diagnoses in the two counties in the most recent 24-hour testing period. The number of patients in the two counties' COVID-19 units remains the same, 59, is 24 hours ago. Since the pandemic began, there have been nearly 18,000 cases of COVID-19 in Washington and Benton counties, representing about 19% of the state's total number of cases. Personal property taxes are due just before midnight tonight. You can make a payment online or mail the payment in, though you'll need the postmark to be before midnight tonight. Payments can be made in person if you wish at your local county collector's office. There is a 10% penalty along with interest that will be applied to late payments. And the 2020 census deadline, which has moved a few times, is now today. Like the personal property taxes, deadline for postmark and online forms just before midnight tonight. Theater Squared is a recipient of the 2020 American Architecture Award, that honor given to the best new buildings designed and constructed by American architects around the world. The T2 home was designed by Marvel Architects with lead design from Charcoal Blue and was a component of the Walton Family Foundation's Design Excellence Program. University of Arkansas Fort Smith is hosting a grand opening of the UAFS Writing Center today, socially distanced and all of that. The facility is designed to support student learning by connecting faculty and tutors with students who want to improve their writing, editing, and research. The new center is in a restored wing of the old gym on Kincaid Avenue. The ceremonial ribbon cutting took place this morning. This is Ozarks at Large. Since the COVID-19 pandemic hit Arkansas in March, more than 50 Marshallese community members in Northwest Arkansas have died from the virus, many during a particularly bad outbreak in the region this spring and summer. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek speaks with the daughter of one of the men who died about the mark COVID-19 will leave on her family and her small, tight-knit community.
Last month, Faith Laukin watched as a headstone was placed on her father's grave.
He cared about people deeply.
Laukin's father, Adelbert, died on July 20th.
That's just kind of how he was. He was just a very exuberant and loving, kind person.
He was also the life of the party.
He always greeted people with a smile and either a joke or just anything. He really loved to just make people feel good.
Ann Blauken says her dad worked hard to provide for his family.
He had 7 kids. There were 7 of us.
He also took care of a lot of other people besides them.
It was a typical Marshallese household growing up in our house when I was a teenager. We had, my uncle and his family and their kids, and then my cousins, and I'm always just multiple people, and he never turned anybody away.
Lauken and her family moved to Springdale from Springfield, Missouri in 2013. And while it wasn't easy, she says it also felt like home.
So fortunately, I lived in the Marshall Islands for a little bit of time in the 90s. And so it is really a lot like living in the Marshall Islands. You have your family and that you don't even know, like you've not been raised around them or anything, but they know who you are through your lineage, through your parents, through your grandparents. And so they treat you as if they've known you for that long.
Which makes the loss of dozens of Marshallese community members from COVID-19 even more devastating.
The magnitude of this disease on our community has just hit us so hard. We've lost a lot of our elders, people that were pillars in our community, who were here to teach us about our culture and to keep the culture in the community. And it's just, yeah, it's just been so devastating to us.
Lauken says it's how the community will remember 2020.
It will be the year of COVID and all of the deaths in our families,
including that of her father.
I was visiting my dad and just like, you know, talking to him because you know, I just miss him. And then I just noticed that there were so many grave sites around him. Like, oh my goodness. And there were more being dug.
Lauken's father was the first to get hospitalized after the entire family came down with the virus.
He was coughing pretty hard and was having trouble breathing. So he got checked into the hospital right away, got put on a ventilator.
Then Lauken had to get checked into the hospital herself. She describes COVID-19 as one of the worst illnesses she's ever had.
I cannot explain it, but I didn't know if I was going to make it. And so, it's a terrible sickness, COVID-19. It really is.
Since she was in the hospital already, Lauken says she was allowed to see her father before he was placed on a ventilator. After a month and a half, doctors determined he might be taking a turn for the better.
And then 2 days later, he died. It was just, it was so quick. Like, he was doing well, and then he died. It just seemed like that. And it was a shock to our family because we were like, wait, you know, we were told he was doing better. What happened? Why is he now not better? Why has he passed away? And that's still something that I struggle with.
Lauken also wonders what would have happened had her parents had access to affordable health care all their lives.
They worked for Kraft Foods for over 20 years. And, you know, they had health insurance. We always had health insurance. They paid taxes. And then they retired. And my dad went into the ministry and he became a pastor. And, you know, he didn't have health insurance.
Her mother, she says, retired because of illnesses doctors still haven't been able to diagnose. As Compact of Free Association migrants, Marshallese adults aren't eligible for a Medicaid or a Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. So while they qualify for subsidies, the cost of marketplace health insurance can still be too much to afford for some families. Lauken says that's why her parents returned to work.
If they didn't have to worry about health insurance, like, could it have been differently? Could things have been different in our life? I know all things happen for a reason, and I don't question the cycle of life or anything like that, but I do question, could things have been made different, you know, better for them?
Lauken's parents had been in the U.S. for nearly 50 years, and she says they've paid taxes into a system that hasn't provided Marshall Islanders with federal benefits since 1996.
My mom is from Rangup Atoll, and that was the most affected atoll from the fallout of the nuclear testings that they did. My mom can never go back to her homeland.
The Republic of the Marshall Islands was the principal site of the U.S. nuclear testing program from 1946 to 1958, and it's considered to have the highest level of nuclear contamination in the world.
Our folks have suffered a lot, and it's not just COVID. is not that just COVID that our folks have suffered from. We've suffered from a lot of illnesses. And I believe those illnesses are nuclear related. I believe they are.
Between the contamination of the land and the displacement of thousands of Marshall Islanders, the U.S. nuclear program permanently altered the traditional diet and lifestyle of the Marshallese people. That's led to health disparities that have existed for decades prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. The Marshallese community now suffers from higher rates of chronic illnesses like diabetes, hypertension, and heart disease, all of which are considered coronavirus comorbidities. Marshall Islanders are also more likely to be considered essential workers, and many are employed by Northwest Arkansas's poultry industry. Loukin's parents both worked for Tyson Foods in Springdale, where hundreds of workers came down with COVID-19 this past spring and summer. But she says it's hard to say where her family ultimately contracted the virus.
I don't know where. I'm not going to say that they got it from work because they were very active in the community. My dad was very active in the community. I was very active in the community. Everyone was out in the community even during that time. I felt like I did not feel like I was going to get it. I don't know why I felt like we were immune to it.
Which is why Loukin is now imploring others to take COVID-19 seriously, wear masks, and practice social distancing.
It can change your life in the most awful way. Even if you feel like it's not going to affect you, it can affect you.
And while there's been a lot of sadness in her community these last few months, Loukin says there's also been a lot of resilience.
We see each family that's struggling, and we look for ways to try and help each family. And just to see the way the community has pulled together to help each other. And then to see the non-Marshallese community look into our community and see how can we pour love into them and how can we help them and during this time because they've recognized it.
Loukin says she and her family have been pouring their energy into a Marshallese food pantry established by the Arkansas Coalition of Marshallese back in August.
That's one of the ways that we have been dealing with it. Of course, we're really sad and we miss my dad every single day. My mom misses him every single day and my kids too. And we want to continue his legacy of love and continue his legacy of pouring into the community, being a part of the community in every way that he was.
Loukin's father was 69 when he passed away. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
Governor Asa Hutchinson announced yesterday the state will start using disposable $5 test kits to conduct weekly coronavirus testing of employees at certain public school districts, as well as at all state prisons and human development centers.
And this is the first time we've developed a plan for sentinel testing or surveillance testing that goes beyond simply symptomatic or exposure type testing. And so this is a new world for us that will give us new benefits for this testing.
The antigen test will be performed using Binex Now kits made by Abbott Laboratories that return results in about 15 minutes without the use of any other equipment. The state has received 100,000 kits from the federal government and expects to receive 50,000 more each week. The governor says that's in addition to the antigen testing that's already been taking place in other settings.
In addition, we have another brand of antigen test, the BD Veritor, that we've had for some time that's available through the Department of Health local offices. And then our long-term care facilities have a direct supply of these that come in from the federal government. There's other hospitals, others that have private sector sources of supply that they have access to the antigens. But this is a plan that we can utilize at the state level to really help us to identify new cases in ways that we haven't before.
About 55% of the Buy Next Now kits will be used for weekly testing of public school employees. Another 40% will be split evenly between the Department of Corrections and the Department of Human Services. The remaining 5%, the governor says, will be kept in reserve for use as needed.
Now, I also will add that we have an election coming up. We're going to have poll workers there. And we want to make election workers to have a priority through their local health office for rapid tests. And this could be through the Abbott Binext Now test, or it could be through the BD Veritor test. But they will have continued priority as the election nears.
As far as test kit distribution to public school districts, Arkansas Secretary of Education Johnny Key says they will be looking at a number of data points.
We will prioritize these schools, not necessarily in this order, but we will be looking at the red zone districts from the ACHI weekly data, the districts that have schools with a history of on-site modifications, districts that may have a current high case number, and then any emerging information that may come about that shows that a hotspot could be developing.
Secretary Key says the state plans to identify priority school districts by Monday, then train staff to administer the test so weekly screenings can begin on November 2nd. Antigen tests, which detect proteins on the surface of the virus, are generally less sensitive than PCR tests, which detect the virus's genetic material. That means antigen tests are more likely to deliver false negatives or false positives. The Binext Now test was granted an emergency use authorization by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration in August after a study found it was effective in detecting COVID-19 in people soon after they developed symptoms. The study didn't examine the test performance in detecting infections in people who are asymptomatic.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Arkansas PBS celebrates music legends throughout October with a series of documentaries and concerts. Classic albums, John Lennon, Plastic Ono Band, and Metallica and the San Francisco Symphony headline the month. Austin City Limits honors the greats with Stevie Ray Vaughan, Rufus Wainwright, and Asleep at the Wheel. MyArkansasPBS.org/schedule for more. The Scott Family Amazium offers a variety of interactive family experiences with art and science. Convenient bike parking and trail access are available for drop-in guests. However, reservations are recommended due to limited capacity. Open every day except Tuesday. More information available at amazium.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Early voting in Arkansas begins Monday, and this year, voters will be able to cast their ballots for three statewide issues. Issue 1 was referred to the voters by the Arkansas General Assembly. The Arkansas Constitution grants the legislature the right to include up to 3 constitutional amendments on the general election ballot. Issue 1 proposes amending the Arkansas Constitution to make permanent a half-cent sales tax that currently helps fund Arkansas's four-lane highway system, county roads, and city streets. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Issue 1 is part of a larger plan put forward by Governor Asa Hutchinson in 2019 to increase funding for highway and road infrastructure by $300 million a year. In addition to the proposed amendment, the governor's plan included Act 416 of 2019, which increased the state's motor fuel tax by 3 cents per gallon on gasoline and 6 cents per gallon on diesel. The new law also increased registration fees for hybrid and electric vehicles to $100 and $200, respectively. Additionally, Act 416 directs any new gaming tax collections that exceed $31.2 million annually to be used for roads. Voters approved the current temporary half-cent sales tax to help fund the Connecting Arkansas program in 2012. The temporary tax is set to expire at the end of June 2023. Voting for Issue 1 would make the half-cent sales tax permanent. Arkansas Trucking Association President Shannon Newton is the chairwoman of the Vote for Roads, Vote for Issue 1 committee. Newton says passing Issue 1 is important because the roads are where they send their employees to work. However, everybody relies on infrastructure.
Everyone uses the roads, much like everyone relies on safety or healthcare or education. Everyone benefits from that infrastructure, no pun intended. But then if you look at just like the last 6 months where people are perhaps staying home. People are relying, you're relying on those roads from distribution centers or grocery stores, or your products from Amazon. You're relying on the roads from where you are and where you're choosing to stay in order to bring you the goods and services that you need in order to stay home and be safe.
Safe roads, Newton says, can help Arkansans save money.
Statistics show that just the state of the disrepair of the roads is actually costing Arkansans, based on the wear and tear on your vehicle, hitting potholes. I think the average Arkansan is spending about $150 per year if you average it out over, all the different maintenance problems that are occurring from, roads that are not being taken care of and causing damage to vehicles.
According to a report released in September by TRIP, a Washington, D.C.-based national transportation nonprofit, Arkansas motorists lose $3.2 billion per year driving on roads that are rough, congested, and lack some desirable safety features. The total cost per average driver in Northwest Arkansas is estimated at nearly $1,300. If Issue 1 passes, the state would take 3% of the revenue generated by the tax for administrative expenses. 70% of the remaining revenue would go to the Arkansas Department of Transportation, 15% to counties, and another 15% to cities. According to an impact statement from the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration, the proposed sales tax is expected to generate about $293.7 million annually. Of that, $205.6 million would be allocated to the State Highway and Transportation Fund, while cities and counties would each be allocated $44 million.
So there is a substantial portion of this, 30%, that is being directly put back into local communities. So there is a substantial piece of it for every corner of the state, no matter where you live. Your city and county budgets are currently receiving the half-cent sales tax. And if it were not to be continued, then those funds would come out of their road budget.
Newton says city and county projects are largely decided at the local level. At the state level, she says there's a 10-year map and a 20-year map for priorities and projects that are available on RDOT's website. Newton says these plans include projects that touch all parts of the state. Infrastructure is a permanent need, so she says it makes sense to approve a permanent tax to support it.
We actually polled various ways to fund this particular program. And the fact that the infrastructure need is permanent, that the cost of infrastructure is not going down, the amount of highway miles in our system is not going down. And so in order to have a permanent dedicated source of revenue with the opportunity for growth, because if you remember, the motor fuel tax is pretty flat. The only way to increase funding from that is to raise the rate. But on the sales tax side, you do have opportunity for growth as the population grows, as the state grows, as our economy grows. That would provide a revenue stream with some growth potential in it for road funding needs.
The permanency of the tax is one reason some oppose it. State Director for Americans for Prosperity Arkansas, Ryan Norris, is the chairman of the No Permanent Tax, No on Issue 1 committee. Norris says officials said the tax would be temporary, so to now make it permanent is acting in bad faith.
So imagine with me, if you will, that you've signed a contract saying that at the end of 10 years, your payments on that contract are done. And then they come back and say, no, we want you to re-up. We want a brand new contract. Now, that's what they're saying. And they want to put it into the Constitution. Now, there's this talk about once it's in the Constitution, you can always go back and revise it. Well, that's technically true, but politically a statistical zero, because the millions of dollars being spent to put this into the Constitution permanently will be the millions of dollars spent to keep it in there. And unless, citizen groups like ours and the others come up to try to make something like that happen, it never will, never has a possibility, really.
Norris says adding a permanent tax to a state that already has a high tax rate is another reason to vote against Issue 1. According to the Tax Foundation, at 9.53%, Arkansas has the second highest average combined state and local sales tax rate in the nation.
That needs to be brought down because it's one that is regressive. It impacts the poor, the middle class, and the fixed income as a portion of their budget more than others. This sales tax, you'll hear the pro side saying it's just a little amount. Well, that little amount can equal as much as a week's groceries for a family, or a few tanks of gas per year, or could be the school clothes that you need for your child. And it's in an absolute when we're seeing the cost of living continually increase. I mean, just last year, we had additional taxes raised on our gasoline and on our diesel fuel.
In September, the Arkansas Insurance Department approved individual health insurance rate increases ranging from 2.9% to 4.9%. And Norris says all of these little increases in taxes and rates can start to add up. He says another problem with Issue 1 is it's consumer-based.
The organizations that push for this, they either receive the taxes or they pass the taxes through to the end consumer at the point of sale. So there's no massive skin in the game, and they get massive benefits for it. So the permanency, the fact that we have the second highest sales tax in the nation is really where AFP comes into this as a reason to oppose it. But there are many other issues, such as the effects that some of our members, they believe the effects of road construction on climate change is a big issue. The fact that Arkansas Department of Transportation really only does one thing, and that's build roads and does no other real transportation investment is an issue for some of our folks.
Earlier this year, Virginia-based consultant Guidehouse produced a report on RDOT that found there are opportunities to strengthen the organization's frameworks for making design decisions to promote improved system performance and cost savings.
That's what we're also asking is that, hey, there are cost savings that Guidehouse has found, the auditor, that that should be implemented before we talk additional monies. There is also, since 2016, there has been the Highway Improvement Act and Act 416 that has given RDOT an additional $180 million in revenues apart from the sales tax.
According to the Arkansas Public Policy Center, which is part of the University of Arkansas's System Division of Agriculture, funding for the state highway system totaled about $1.6 billion in 2018. About 47% of funding comes from the federal government, and the remaining 53% comes from state sources, including the current half-cent sales tax, motor fuel taxes, vehicle registration fees, a natural gas severance tax, various permit fees, transfer fees, interest, and miscellaneous income, and appropriations from general funds. In addition to this, RDOT estimates it will receive $95 million from Act 416 when it is fully implemented in fiscal year 2021. RDOT also estimates cities and counties will receive about $14 million each in additional turnback funds from this act. For more information from supporters, visit voteforroads.com. For information from the opposition, visit americansforprosperity.org/no-permanent-tax. For neutral information on Issue 1, visit uaex.edu/ballot. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas Department of Agriculture and the Farm Credit Associations of Arkansas have announced the winners of the 2020 Arkansas-Grown School Garden Contest. Fayetteville Public Schools won Best Harvest Partnership School Garden, and West Arkansas Child Development Incorporated in Alma won Best Overall School Garden. So the Fayetteville Public Schools will earn a $500 award, and West Arkansas Child Development Incorporated in Alma wins a $1,000 award.
Welcome to today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. There's no shortage of notable Arkansas Razorback football players who've gone on to enjoy successful business careers. Names like Chuck Dykus, Jim Lindsay, Kevin Scanlon, and Jay Beckett, and, of course, Jerry Jones. On this week's report, Roby Brock has an interview with another Razorback standout who is beginning to forge his own successful path in the business world. Tyler Wilson, the former Hogs QB, is a real estate investor and consultant, and more recently, he's a new equity investor with Arkansas-based Delta Solar, where he will serve as Senior Vice President of Sales and a member of the Board of Directors. After the break, Tyler Wilson discusses the intersection of solar energy and commercial real estate on today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. Live fearless. More information at arkansasbluecross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
Greenwood native Tyler Wilson graduated from the University of Arkansas in 2012 and was the Oakland Raiders' fourth-round draft pick in the 2012 NFL Draft. He played for three teams over the course of three seasons before retiring to Little Rock and beginning a career in commercial real estate. Wilson works for Commercial Realty LLC, which has offices in Little Rock and Fayetteville, and he focuses on development and brokerage. Wilson also heads up a real estate investing and consulting business in Little Rock, JTW Consulting. Wilson recently joined Little Rock-based solar array installer Delta Solar as an equity investor, board member, and senior vice president of sales. Talk Business and Politics editor-in-chief Roby Brock sat down recently with Wilson to discuss the start of his post-football career.
What I've learned in that time has been an unbelievable experience for me in the real estate business, and seeing so many aspects of the real estate business, from retail to office to warehouse flex space, which we primarily have focused. But we've seen historically low interest rates, and been in a time where we've got opportunities that are in front of us from a banking perspective, and opportunities to invest and build and develop and create. So that's been phenomenal. What I think we've seen over that 5 years, and specifically the last 4 or 5 months, is a change in climate due to natural events. And I think anybody viewing the program today would say, if they haven't had to change their business model or thought or approach to the way they act day to day and what they do and how they survive in business, then I'd question that. And we're certainly, we've had to do the same thing as a developer in real estate. And what we've seen is construction costs continue to increase. We've seen over the last 5 years, just to throw some generic numbers, I'd say there's anywhere from 15 to 20% increase in construction costs. And so we've had to create ways to value engineer really every project and rethink real estate development in its entirety. And that's led me to some creative ways, of which we'll get to here shortly.
All right, let's talk Delta Solar. It is a solar array installer. What does that mean? What does the company specialize in?
Well, this is something that as a real estate investor and developer and working on projects, it was something that I stumbled into pretty naturally, or on a whim, really, working out of the University of Arkansas with the Razorback Foundation on a particular project, which we bumped into an individual of which I've just admired and come to admire, and his knowledge of the industry, being Dr. Doug Hutchings, who's a co-founder of Delta Solar, and previous with another company related to the solar industry at the University of Arkansas. And understanding his involvement in this company, a latest investment with a local businessman, Bob East, who has built and developed several companies here in the Central Arkansas area and has a track record that's certainly worth noting for this industry. And his investment in the company is also very intriguing. But to narrow down into what we do as a solar installer, is provide customers with an opportunity to own their own power. And that's a unique thought for a lot of people. What we have done in the real estate business is we like to own our own real estate. And you know, whether you own your own real estate or lease your real estate, there's still a power bill at the end of the day, and there's an electric cost. And I think that's something that people have just become accustomed to, and they think that's just there, and that's the way we've always done business. But as I said earlier, we've had to get creative, or I have had to think outside the box, and understanding what Delta Solar provides to customers is a way to own their own power with a solar array, whether that be an on-site system or an off-site system, to reduce their electric bill and own their power essentially over time.
And your new role, what enticed you to join this as an investor, and what will you be doing for the company?
We've gone back and forth on a title, and we've settled on that one, and I'm thankful for it. But you know what I'm excited to do here is be a part of the board day to day, and master plan an idea and a concept that about what the company can be and become, and where it's been, understanding the roots of the company, which has been primarily in Southeast Arkansas to date, working with the farmers in Southeast Arkansas and grain bin projects, and making you know, their investment found. And I think that is that's where we've been, and where we're going is slightly more the commercial direction, and that me being a part and me being around what I've been around in the commercial space is I think a natural transition fit, and works really well with one, me as a developer, but two, the friends in the space and the colleagues in the space and all the connections that I have. I think that's a natural, seamless fit.
Wilson said there's a certain value in providing a reduced power cost to anyone with a real estate asset. For that complete interview with Roby Brock, visit our sister website at talkbusiness.net. It has been a busy week at nwabusinessjournal.com. On the website, you will find a story about the region's largest architectural and engineering firm, now offering construction services. Bentonville-based Harrison French & Associates, or HFA, says it is getting into that space through a new company called Informed Construction Services. That's Informed with an E. Both of those companies are wholly owned subsidiaries of the holding company HFA Enterprises. Chris Horton is the president and CEO of the new venture. And the Northwest Arkansas Technology Summit is a virtual event this year, and more than 1,000 attendees are expected to participate. The four-day event begins Sunday, and Jeff Delarosa has a rundown of some of the speakers, as well as interviews with leaders of the Greater Bentonville Area Chamber of Commerce, which is the organizing body of the summit. And Bobby Lee Odom, who was a giant in the legal community in Washington County in Northwest Arkansas, has died. Odom was a product of the University of Arkansas School of Law. He opened a law firm in downtown Fayetteville in 1982, and he practiced law in Northwest Arkansas for 50 years. Bobby Lee Odom was 81. For those headlines, be sure to visit nwabusinessjournal.com, where you can follow our reporting each and every day. I'm Paul Gatling, and that is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, early voting begins Monday. Along with election officials and poll workers, partisan poll watchers will also be on hand monitoring the election.
And the reason that it requires this form is that a poll watcher has the ability to challenge a voter's eligibility to vote.
We'll learn the rules regarding monitoring election polls on Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF.
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. One of the most beautiful times in our beautiful area is the advent of fall and the turning colors of the trees. Changing seasons, transitioning, bringing something new, transforming, is what musicians all over the world have been trying these days due to the changing schedules in orchestra seasons. This has proven as a time to reflect, to recreate, and to come up with answers that will allow music to continue reaching out audiences. A great example of this kind of innovation happened a few weeks ago in Madrid, Spain, at the Teatro Monumental. Jazz pianist, arranger, and composer from Cuba, Pepe Rivero, presented his Latin jazz version of Antonio Vivaldi's Four Seasons. This performance was held with the highest standards of safety, both for the small group of musicians on stage and for a reduced audience. For the occasion, Pepe Rivero's quartet joined forces with Musique Ensemble, led by Colombian violinist Rubén Darío Reina, in an interpretation that bridged genres, times, and nationalities, taking listeners through unusual paths. Rubén Reina is an avid violinist with an expansive international career as a soloist in Europe, the United States, and Latin America, who moved to Spain in 1997 after graduating with honors from the Moscow Conservatory. During a brief intermission, Pepe Rivero himself prompted the audience to imagine a curious Antonio Vivaldi getting on a boat in his native Italy and arriving later to the Americas, where he explored places and seasons all new to him, all the way from New York to Buenos Aires, with some stops in the Caribbean and Bahia in Brazil, discovering unknown harmonies and rhythms, all set up in a place for the new approach to the Four Seasons. Thank you. We too change with the seasons and adapt. I hope you consider your continued support to music and musicians in a way that is safe for you and yours, and in a way that guarantees the sustainability of our treasured artists. Today, we explore a new version of The Four Seasons by Antonio Vivaldi. This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Devil's Den. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, and Ozarks at Large, a production of 91.3 KUAF. Contributors to our Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large included Zuzanna Sitek, who also delivered the news about the new quick test for the virus obtained by the state, Antoinette Grajeda, and Leah Uribe. Timothy Dennis produced our show. Lee Wood produced this week's edition of Sound Perimeter. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal with Paul Gatling and Roby Brock is part of our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can find out more at talkbusiness.net. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. More information about Daryl at darylsean.com. We will be back with you at noon and 7 tomorrow for a brand new Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. Thanks so much for being with us. If you can't join us at noon or 7, don't forget you can subscribe to our absolutely free podcast that is available for streaming and subscriptions through any of the major podcast distributors. Please take care of yourself. Get rest. Check on friends and neighbors. We'll be back with you tomorrow from the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. I'm Kyle Kellums.